We're just going to jump right in. I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Greg M., from the Irwin Group in the Central Westmoreland area.
I'm an addict. My name is Greg. I was kind of hoping more people would be in swimming in that petri dish over there than we're here. All right, and I'm actually kind of happy I lost the coin toss. I just told Carla she can clean up the mess I'm about to make with this topic. All right, so our solution is a spiritual one. For me, when I first got here, I firmly was of the belief that my problem was putting a needle in my arm. I saw that as the main issue that needed addressed, and once I got that, once that miracle of losing the desire to use happened, that I'd be totally fine. I wouldn't have to worry about coming back and sitting with you ugly people and, you know, like listening to your horrible stories and drinking your terrible coffee. I come to find that, for me, like I had to, it was just recently mentioned here that, our basic text tells us of what we need to, what we think we know about the truth, it needs to say under revision. And for me, what I had to take a look at and really come to terms with is that, like, if drugs were my problem, in the literature it says the disease affects us physically, spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. If drugs were just the problem, if it was a physical thing, all I'd have to do is stop using. I can do that in a number of different fashions. Going to jail, going to treatment, just straight abstinence would resolve the problem. If my disease was emotional, all I'd need is some therapy. If my disease was mental, all I'd need is some psych meds. And it tells us in our literature, disease is a spiritual disease. In order for that, I need a spiritual solution. And this is what happened with, like, I didn't get this my first try. I could come in here and, get clean for a little bit. Get a sponsor and name only. Maybe work a couple steps and do the writing on them, but not worry about how to apply them in my daily life. And I could never stay clean. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I came to, the opinion that, I thought I was just kind of, spiritually broken or just too damaged to get what you guys were talking about here. And something happened over the course of this this time coming through. Some of the predecessors that were around when I first got clean, they took time to explain stuff to me. Like the steps weren't something we hang on a wall. They aren't some cliche shit that we throw around and beat people over the head with. The steps and the traditions of Narcotics Anonymous are a guided set of spiritual principles. Each step in tradition contains a certain set of principles, and we apply them. We are directed to apply them and in the manner that's suggested through the wording of the steps. And when I started approaching step work and working traditions and living this program in that form and fashion, all of a sudden some stuff changed. I didn't understand. Like I thought all my defects of character were because I was a piece of shit, that I was just too fucked up to do anything good in this life. That I had too much damage occur to me. Not to go into a drug log, but I started using at the age of 14. By the age of 18, I was a full-blown heroin addict. By the time I was 20, I was homeless for the first time. By the time I was 21, I believe, was the first time you and me met up here. I started to, get put in different facilities and halfway houses and treatment centers and all this other shit because I couldn't manage life on life's terms. I couldn't deal with, getting up and holding a job. I couldn't deal with, getting up and, maintaining a relationship. Because as soon as I got uncomfortable or didn't feel satisfied, I need to find the next one. The first principle that I was taught in this program is honesty. Our predecessor, one of our predecessors likes to talk about, when you first get clean, you need to have relationships. You need to have 5 special relationships, And how to develop a relationship with yourself is to be honest. Our first step talks about honesty. Our first tradition talks about honesty. When I came into the meetings and I actually identified as an addict, it was the first honest fucking thing that came out of my mouth in probably 10 years. And it felt weird. And I didn't like it. Because it made me part of you guys. And that's why, today when I come to meetings, I identify as an addict first, name second. Principle before personality. You know, and when I start getting honest with things, like, you know, when I got to my sixth step, I thought, you know, defects were just, you know, like, just because I was so corrupted and this, that, and the third. You know, and it wasn't, I didn't understand that the fact that I stopped being honest with myself, honesty, when I start being dishonest, it opens the door for every defect. Every defect. Because I think that, you know, I start thinking that I'm less than, I need to compensate. I started thinking that you guys are gifted something that I got to work for, and I'm pissed off at you because you got a free fucking ride and I got to actually do some work. You know, I get these, like, feelings, and you know, it's a disease of feelings as well. You know, and the predecessors that were here when I got here told me my feelings don't fucking matter. My feelings, you know, will take me out. My first thought is wrong. My second thought is probably wrong. Until I check it with someone, don't expect a good result. You know, and let time prove that my decision-making process doesn't need reviewed with someone else 24/7. You know, and it took a long time for me to, like, you know, get humble enough to actually reach out and ask for help. Say, hey, I'm thinking about going to this meeting. Why are you thinking about going to that meeting? Well, this girl's there. Maybe you should go to a different meeting. I don't want to go to a different meeting. You know, another principle, willingness. Willingness is not me doing what I want. Willingness is me taking a suggestion that I didn't come up with that I don't want to do. You know, and working against the grain. Very little of what I wanted to do since I got clean has contributed to my recovery, kept me clean, or helped anybody else stay clean. You know, and they told me to stay away from women. I thought it was a whole bunch of old guys whose junk didn't work anymore and couldn't afford Viagra, hating on me, getting pissed off because I was having some fun because I got clean when I was 26. And they were all sitting around 40 and broken. That's where my head was at. I come to see that, like, you know, we're a fellowship, that we need to treat each other as like brothers and sisters in recovery. That if I'm putting, you know, some kind of self-up desire ahead of the well-being of another person, I'm indirectly harming them. And I'm harming myself, because by substituting and distracting myself with some form of physical pleasure, I don't have to deal with that spiritual void that I was left with when I got done with my first step. And I shared about how unmanageable my life got. You know, there is no human or tactile, you know, thing that will fill a God-shaped hole. So for me, like, you know, what does fill that hole, that God-shaped hole that's in me when I get done with my first step, are principles. Like, I can be humble. I can walk in here and not come in and feel all broken up and identify as, you know, I'm an addict, my problem's Greg. You know, like some self-deprecating statement or anything like that. I can just come in and be a part of, because you guys told me through the first tradition that we have a fellowship, we have a program, we have a proven program recovery that's been working since 1953 that has saved millions of lives. And I can have this gift if I'm willing to do the work. You know, and again, humility. I am not too sick. I am not too broken. I am not too screwed up that I can't get this gift of recovery. I have to be open-minded, because the best suggestions I've got, again, they didn't come from me. They came from people that were further down the path, people that had been where I was walking and knew the landmines that were in front of me. You know, when I got clean, I really didn't have a whole lot. I had a car full of shit that I moved out of this apartment I was about to get evicted out of in Wilkes-Barre. Moved into my mom's house because, for whatever reason, they decided to have a little ounce of compassion that day and let me come home. You know, and when I got clean, I had no job. I had a relationship that was hanging by the thinnest of threads and probably, you know, basically a dope bag. I had a kid that was just born that I had a hard time holding her. I would tremble because of this, like, fear that was in me that I was going to do something to harm her. You know, I didn't have an education. I had a whole bunch of failed attempts at college. You know, I had a GED because I couldn't finish high school. You know, 30% attendance doesn't get you on the valedictorian podium. You know, and as I got clean, and as I stayed clean, I started taking suggestions. My life evolved, and it turned into something. You know, and at first, it wasn't anything good. My first year was rough. You know, I don't mean to keep getting into opinion and shit, but I hate it when people say that any year of their recovery was harder than their first, because my first year was a fucking bitch. My first year, I didn't even want to mention that I had a clean date because it felt so fragile. It felt like it could just fall apart like that. And it probably could have. You know, and as I got clean, I started taking suggestions and started actually doing what you people told me to do. You know, I got a job. I got back into school. I completed school. I got a degree. You know, I managed to patch up the relationship thing. I learned how to become a parent. I remember when I got custody of my kid back and they were living under the same roof with me, walking around feeling like I was wearing, like, you know, like you're a little kid and you like play around and you put on your dad's shoes, or if you're a girl, you put on your mom's shoes and you walk around, they're like 12 sizes too big. Like, that's how I felt as a parent, because I had no clue what the hell I was doing. You know, and it took time for me to like grow into those shoes and actually like learn how to like conduct myself in a manner that's fitting. You know, and this isn't stuff that I figured out. There's very little what I'm saying here is original. You know, all this stuff was taught to me by you guys. You know, we talk about a spiritual solution. You know, second tradition talks about, you know, ultimate authority being the loving God as He expresses Himself through our group conscience. All right, so if the ultimate authority is God, where do I find a group conscience at? You guys. You give me the spiritual solution. It's all a gift from you. Nothing else. I've never gotten to a point in my recovery where, you know, the desire to use can't come back. You know, what's that line? I'm drug free, not drug proof. You know, and there are times where, like, you know, I talk about this with people I sponsor. Like, you know, the first thing they look at is the symbol. It was the first thing I was taught to look at. You know, self, God, service, society. And when one of those sides of that pyramid is lacking, you know, I have to address it, or I will topple and crumble. And whoever's closest to me gets affected by that. You know, and when I got, you know, and after I was here for a while, you guys told me, like, I didn't have to settle for some shitty job. I didn't have to settle for just, you know, renting an apartment. I didn't have to settle for all this stuff. If I'm willing and able to do the work, I can have, you know, bigger things in my life, better things in my life. And not only that, like, after I got to, like, a 6 and a 7 step, you guys started to show me how to keep this stuff. You know, like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I used, I could wake up broke, be high by 10, and be broke again by noon, and sick as fuck by 4 o'clock, and start to cycle all over again. And it went on 24/7. You know, and, like, we're addicts. We're real good at getting things. We are horrible at maintaining them. Horrible at growth. It took me like 5 years to be able to have a house plant because I wouldn't pay attention to watering it. You know, the steps offer me principles and direction and guidance. You know, and again, I have to maintain those relationships with my sponsor. I have to maintain those relationships in my home group. You know, like my home group, you know, as a cheap plug, you know, it's the Irwin Group, Central Westmoreland. We meet every Tuesday, First United Methodist Church, 310 Oak Street, 7:30 to 8:30 every week. Come hell or high water, we're there. You know, my home group is a modest group. It is not the all-stars of Central Westmoreland area. Ask the guys sitting on the right side, they'll tell you. You know, but we are there consistently, and I am, you know, my home group teaches me accountability. It teaches me to show up when I don't feel like going, when the game's on, when the wife's mad, when the kids are, you know, just like, you know, can you please stay home? Because if I stop, you know, once I stop, cut off the connection between what has given me the life I have, you know, everything wilts and dies, and I will lose it. I've seen me do it. And I've seen I don't know how many people since I've been here do it as well. And there's very little more tragic than seeing someone with time go out. You know, I mean, we've gone through that at our area where you see people that were, you know, like one of the first gentlemen I had sponsor me, because I didn't get this on my first try. My first sponsor to actually try to do anything with, when he was one of those dudes, when he shared, he could make the guys cry. And the women just start, you know, getting ready to write down his number. You know, and that was attractive to me because he was, you know, accepted by the masses. You know, and people look forward to seeing him and stuff like that. And you know, I watched him check out. And it was gut-wrenching. I remember I was at the World Convention in Atlanta in 02. And I called him just to check in. And I knew his birthday was right around then. And I called him and I said, hey, man, it's me. I'm just calling to check in. And, you know, he didn't answer his phone for like 3 days, which was a little weird. And I finally got him on the phone. And he told me that he'd relapsed. You know, that taught me a real valuable lesson. It's not in how you present yourself that is a sign of how you work your program. You know, what we do, let me rephrase. What I do late at night, behind closed doors, when there are no witnesses, when no one's holding me accountable, that shows me where I'm really at. When I'm home at 11:30 at night, you know, what am I thinking about? What am I doing? Am I on the phone with another recovering addict? Am I writing on a step? Am I praying? Am I taking care of things around my house? Am I, you know, resting if I need to? Am I doing what needs to be done? Or am I chasing for something outside of myself, you know, just to tide over the whatever feeling I have in that moment? And, you know what, I'm not going to drag this on super long, and honestly, you know, like I said, our second speaker has a much better grasp on this stuff than I do. You know, and she's one of the people that's kind of like led the way for me here. You know, put it this way, if there was another, I'm not like stupid. I'm probably not as smart as I think I am, but I'm not stupid. If there was another way through this shit, I would have taken it. If there was another way to do this program or to get what this program has given me, I would have found it by now. I'm still going to funerals of the people that think they have a better idea. You know, a lot of times, you know, when people check out, it's not that they want to use, they just think they have a different way. You know, and again, I don't really know if I can find the words to express the gratitude I have for what NA has given me. You know, like that spiritual solution that NA talks about through our steps and through our traditions. You know, and that's just my interpretation of where this topic's supposed to go. There's no line in our basic text that says, by doing this, your daughter's going to, you know, when she gets a homework assignment to write about her hero, your name's going to be on it. Like, I didn't expect that shit to happen. You know, like my mother-in-law, when something's going on, she calls to talk to me and not her own daughter. You know, like, I'm seen as, like, the responsible person in the relationship, which scares the shit out of me at times. But, you know, like that's the reality of what I'm dealing with nowadays. My life has changed as a result of this program. And every person I meet that is willing to stay the course and do the work has a similar experience. I mean, you know, not everybody's going to get, you know, the Hallmark dream. Well, you know, we'll just be real about it. But everybody ends up getting exactly what they need. You know, the guys I sponsor, they come in, they're gray as shit, sick as hell, can't hold a meal down, offer to take them out for a cup of coffee, and they can't stomach it because they got too much acid reflux from all the shit that's been going in their system and stuff. And, you know, see them a year later, and they're trying to buy me food. And it's like, dude, you know, it's cool. Seeing you alive is enough. You know, seeing those conversations go from, like, me, you know, talking and trying to carry things to, like, them engaging and, like, having a sense of humor and being able to laugh and smile and live and take pictures and have children and you know, doing all the stuff they do. It's the same shit I got to do, too. It shows me that it wasn't just me that got this gift. And the God of my understanding has the ability to work through me to other people. And I also understand that I'm not that special. Because if I'm not here, NA will still work. You know, I'm not entitled to one piece of this. Everything is a result of effort, and blessings come along with it. You know, and it's up for me to accept them or reject them as they come. So, all right, that's pretty much my time. I'm going to wrap up. Thank you very much for letting me share. Thank you guys for being here.
They already know it's you, Carla. That's why. Now, I'd like to introduce our second speaker from the Sun Valley Historical Meeting in the news area, Carla C.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name is Carla. And it's so crazy. I'm going to take these sunglasses because I'll tend to hide behind them. Years and years of using, I always wore sunglasses, so even when it wasn't sunny out. So that was my way of hiding, so I'm just going to pull that aside. It's funny that Greg had said about identification of addict first and then his name. That has just been revealed to me a couple weeks. How I struggled with that, and I didn't want that label. And I was one of those addicts that I wasn't grateful for when I came in here. I wasn't brimming with excitement and happy and hope. I was angry, and I was just beaten down. But I just thought it was insane that someone would say I'm a grateful addict, or I'm grateful to be an addict, or I'm grateful being here. I was like, why? You're crazy, you know. But like today, I'm grateful that I'm an addict because of the topic. The solution is a spiritual one, our solution, not just my solution. It's ours. It's collectively ours, you know, and it's about what we do with it, you know. I knew the problem. I was stuck in the problem. I perpetuated the problem. But I realized that of all the places that I could be, this was the place for me. I'm home in Narcotics Anonymous. This wasn't my home at first. I did the other fellowship first because I chased a man in there and I thought he was the solution. But really what he was doing was just setting my path up for my solution to be found. And I found it in Narcotics Anonymous. I had this one girl, and we were like road dogs, and we just ran to meetings. If it was a 12-step meeting, we were there, you know. And it got to the point where I didn't know where I was at and how to identify myself. And I realized through their steps and having a spiritual awakening that I was an addict. And so it pointed me here, Narcotics Anonymous. So when I got this topic, and I want to thank, you know, this retreat, I want to thank the committee members. I love this retreat. I love the atmosphere that's here. And it's always an honor and a privilege to speak. And but when I landed here, I realized all my life I was seeking something to get me out of the pain. I needed help desperately. And when we were talking about earlier at the camp, like I was one of those ones that I was seeking, and I went to religion and I went to psychiatry. I went everywhere. I sought it through men. Could you please take this pain from me? And I wanted that to stop. And my solution to all my problems is Narcotics Anonymous. And it's in the steps, you know, that Greg had shared on. The disease will have me focus on the problem. And the fear will help me stay in the problem. But the spiritual solution is a spiritual one. And I'm going to be honest with you. When I first heard of any 12-step recovery and even Narcotics Anonymous, my first thing was, it's spiritual, it's a cult, you know, it's a cult, don't go there, you know. And of my journey and all the different paths that led me here, you know, I look at that, like that circle, you know, it led me to the center of the circle was the spiritual one. But right away, the disease didn't even understand why I was like indifferent and intolerant to spirituality. And I was so much in bondage that when I got here, even years of recovery, working steps, like if you feel that you've arrived, keep digging. Because for me, I have to keep seeking the solution. The disease will always want me to focus on the problem and stay in the fear, you know, of that uncomfortability. I don't wanna, you know, or, you know, the famous thing that I'll say, and people who are close to me, whether friends, like, it doesn't matter. I don't know what it is. And I'm like, yes, you do. No, I don't. And I'm like, sit still, pray, and it'll be revealed to you. It's just you don't want to see it. And that's my experience. When I don't want to see what the fear is, then I'm not seeking a solution. I'm looking at the problem. And, you know, in the reading, when it talks about, like, what to watch out for is the indifference and intolerance. And Greg had shared, like, people going out with time clean, just going out with time clean. And they could have been step working mofo. Like, I don't care. They were working steps. But what has come to happen is, as soon as they become indifferent and intolerant, the disease has already manifested in their lives. And that's what I witness, and I'm taking judgment of that because I don't want to be in that path. I don't want to be in total denial, walking, doing the death march clean, because that's what it is. I believe when I'm stuck in the problem and all I see is problem, and when I hear someone, and I hope it never comes across my mouth ever. And if it does, please step to me. Please step to me and tell me that that came out of my mouth. Those people. If you hear that come from my mouth, please step to me and tell me you're indifferent and intolerant. Let us love you. Because that's my experience. I've been seeing it everywhere. And that is the disease. And that is the problem. So, one of the main things that I'm with my sponsor today, I've had a few sponsors. And each one of them had a purpose in my life for a reason. And I'll never take that from them. You know, like, I can never talk anything negative about them. I was struggling as a female with time clean, working steps, going to meetings, and I'm going to try not to get my opinion in there. I'm just going to try to just practice love and understanding. Coming to meetings and not seeing women showing up with time clean and sharing about step work. I think, I'm going to do it for me, and then that way it'll be my experience and not my opinion. I think it's a travesty as a woman or a male in recovery and getting all these things because you sought out spiritual principles and you were in a solution. Stop coming and not share that with the next person, whether it be female or male. And I picked this woman. She has years clean. She's still serving H&I. And I say this on a spiritual proud, being prideful, because I'm not saying to where it's detrimental. I'm saying in a prideful way, in a good way. I am happy and grateful that we are a family of seeking solutions. She will talk about the problem, and she will be honest if she is struggling with the solution. And there's always a process, and I used to hate that word. And you tell someone that, and they're like, yeah, you know, you and your process can go, like, you know, take a walk, you know. But, like, it is true. Like, if you're on the path, it's going to be a process. It's practice. And what I love about her is she keeps showing up. She shares the joy. She shares the love. And she shares her realness. And she always says to me, we're solution based. And so when I look at my people that I sponsor, I say, we're solution based. I remind them of the solution. I don't talk about the problem. I'm all about admitting. And that is in our first step. And that has saved my life in recovery. And I'm talking about 7 years clean, wanting to take my life. And I had work steps. And I was showing up. And I was recovering. And it wasn't like I was like... And just stay with me. I wasn't acting out, and like all these consequences were coming to me, and I'm like, oh my God, I better do something about this. I was doing all those things that we're supposed to be doing, and it came down to something was revealed to me, and I had become indifferent and intolerant. I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to look at it, because the truth scared me. And I was embarrassed, you know. And when it talks about in our literature, you know, about saving face or saving your ass, I wanted to save face. I had 7 years clean, and I was sponsoring a lot of women. And what will they think? I didn't say those people. I said, what will they think of me because I'm struggling? And my experience is sometimes the struggle is the solution, but we label it a problem. So I had to like really look at like really admitting what the problem was. And the problem was me. I was in another marriage that had failed miserably because I was in it. It wasn't because I chose him and it was him. I chose him, but I was the problem. There were some underlying things that step work, and it just wasn't time. And I really look at this, and maybe your experience is different, or maybe you don't agree with this, but this is my truth. My truth is this, that maybe I had to get married one more time. For me to wake up and say, okay, three's not a fucking charm. Because it was the third one. Clean. The first one wasn't in recovery. The second one, I chased him into recovery because he was in recovery. So, yeah, that's me. And what I come to understand was I was codependent. I didn't want to look at it one more time, that I was afraid of being alone, being rejected, and being abandoned. I was afraid of being alone. I had been prideful of, I can like stand on my own, I'm my own woman, I don't need anyone, you know. And even my second year of recovery, I looked at it like, this is the last time I make, and this was before the third husband, this is the last time that I'm going to make a man my higher power. And what ended up happening was, that was true, I became this man's higher power. 2 years clean, and he was early in recovery, and I was telling him how he should work his steps and what meetings to go to and who he should talk to. So what I did was the reverse of it, all because I didn't want to look and admit the problem so I could get into the solution. And so then I get into a couple of different relationships. Still don't want to look at my issues. I don't want to be alone. I don't want. And here's the thing. The second husband was an addict, but he was going to the other fellowship. He ended up relapsing after we got married. Whatever. I can't even, the story is amazing, sick. When I think about how sick I was and what my belief system then. And what had ended up happening was, the pain of that, I had a few months clean and I had to choose recovery, and not just for me. You want to stay with whoever, whatever, that's for you to work out. But for me, I knew I was not going to stay clean, because the choice was down to this. I got a hold of what he was using, which was not my high, but I looked at it in my hand and I said, I should probably just take this and at least we'll be together. We'll be together. And that was going to be my death sentence. So I had to choose the solution. The spiritual path for me was recovery. And because of my first year of recovery, of him almost dying and me questioning and how I left him and how he shot up dope and it caused an air bubble in his brain and it burst and he was on deathbed, and I looked at him and I'm like, I don't choose this. I'm going to recover. I need to walk away. And the pain, that pain, and I can still feel it. A fear of, I had to go on. And I didn't realize that I told myself, I will never be with a using addict ever again. I will not ever have a relationship with an addict, because I don't want to feel the pain of them leaving me. And it didn't even have to be like they cheated on me, because that I could have handled. But how do you compete with the disease? And that's what I was looking at, how it was affecting me. So that fear just went right along with any other man that was going to come down the line who wasn't an addict. And the thing is I didn't want to look at it. So it just got, I just drug myself into deeper pain. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful, and I never thought I'd say that either. I'm grateful for all the painful relationships, all the things that I had to go through to get me where I'm at today, because I know what I deserve and I know what I don't deserve. And I know that there is always solution. And it baffles me. And if this hits you hard and you're offended, pray about it and maybe talk to your sponsor about it. I don't understand. And I hope just for today I don't get that in that place where I'm not coming to meetings. I'm sitting on a step. And I make that phone call, I just don't understand what's going on. Because I get that once in a while. Are you going to meetings? No. How many meetings are you going to? Maybe once a week. Maybe. Have you worked on your step? No. Have you called anybody? No. So, what I tell them is, that's the problem. Now, I'm going to tell you some crazy stuff that is the solution. More NA. More NA. Because that's my experience. The more problems that I have or I'm struggling with, I don't even want to say they're problems. I'm looking at it as an opportunity to get in sync more with my God and with other addicts, that connection. I look at it as, you know, like this, these tentacles or an outlet, and I just plug in all these different outlets. Boom, boom, boom. That's the solution. When I unplug and say, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it, then I'm in the problem. And I love sponsorship. It is the heartbeat of this program, because sometimes we need to, you know, I can't even pronounce it, but I know it. When you breathe into somebody, what is it? Resuscitate? Okay. That's where I look at it as. It's the heartbeat. I'm going to, like, maybe sometimes I have to, like, punch you in your chest. Maybe I have to breathe life into you, but it's all love, because it's going to save your life. I'm not saving your life. I'm only giving you what we come in here for. This is what we do. This is it. More NA. That's a solution. Not less. Not let me put these fires out, and then maybe I'll come to NA. Come to NA. Then you can put this one out, and then you come back and say, oh, I got this one. Put that one out. You know, it just, I look at it, the disease wants us to stay in the problem all the time. That's my problem. So the spiritual part of this program, it's a spiritual one. It's a spiritual malady. So why do I do less and expect more? You know, and I get there. Please believe me. There have been times where I have gone through some things, and NA, I remember someone saying to me, you come to NA and you chase NA, and then after a while, NA gets you. Just gets you. And it's not like you snag me up and you hold me hostage and you make me go to meetings. What it is a, just a, it's a natural reflex. What do I do? Here's the problem, solution. What's the problem? Solution. That's what I do. I come back to the solution, and it's crazy what a meeting will do to you. It's crazy when you say, I need help. I've never, ever, ever saw or heard of anyone come in and say, I need help, and no one comes to them. There is at least one addict who can identify that pain, and sometimes they don't even have to say, I need help. We can look at you, and you can look at me, and you're like, something's going on with her. And that's what's so important about keep coming back to the solution, because if you're not in the solution, how can we help you? How can we help you? If you just refuse, and I always look at that. I get my ass beat. I get beat down, and I struggle when I say no. When I just say no. But when I'm going through pain and when I'm upset, I mean, there's been things, this new job that I'm in, it was made for me. I'm talking made for me. I feel it. When I'm walking in this place, you guys are with me, and I can just like laugh, and I feel safe because the spiritual connection that I have with you, all the conversations I've had with you, I have you with me. Anytime I'm in fear or I'm in joy or anything, you guys are with me because we understand that this is saving our lives on a daily. And all this is cracks me up. Of all the diseases, yes, it's hurtful. And I remember that. Like, if you are a newcomer or you're new or you're just coming back, I know that pain. We all know that pain. And when we can get in touch with that pain, then we can be there and understand and help you. But there are times where I just know everything's going to be all right because I'm going to see somebody, or I'm going to get that phone call, or where I'm going to seek out somebody who gets me. so that they can listen. And there's been just recently with this job, I've been like, some things have been coming up, you know. And it's so funny, the one speaker I just had heard, he's like, you don't know me. And it's just so funny because at my job, my defects want to come up. And I just, like, because there's some things that are going on that are crazy. But what it is like, the spiritual principles that I've learned. And it's so funny because, like, I was having a problem with certain situation. And I got it messed up because, like, you know, spiritual in all of my affairs, right? Everything is, it's all in all my affairs. But I was having a problem with this one individual, this student. And my director looked at me and she goes, you have to practice empathy. And I was like, what? I'm Carla. I'm very empathetic. But what I was doing was, and she goes, you have to be compassionate and you ask more questions. And here's the thing, you know, I've learned healthy boundaries in NA. I've learned that. Because I did everything else, boundaries. I would just step over boundaries. Like, what? Now what are you going to do? You know? So I've learned that here, but I was forgetting, like, it's okay to, like, try to reach and try to connect to someone. They don't actually have to be an addict for me to care. But I was, like, for some reason at this new job, I was putting a line, this divided line, going, no, you're not stepping over there. This is you here, and then when you're here, you're this person. And when I think about it, like, no, I'm an addict in recovery, so why wouldn't I use those spiritual principles? And this is perfect here. And at first, I got really, like, upset with her. Like, how dare you? How dare you say that I'm not empathetic? But she didn't say that. She said, you have to learn to be empathetic. You have to ask questions. So she was giving me the solution. Because it was a problem. I wasn't reaching out. I wasn't, like, you know, and I was looking at it as, where we learn here, mind your own business. If they're not coming to you and talking to you, you don't ask. But, like, I had to reach out and try to find a solution for them. Okay, why aren't you coming to school? Is there something that we can do to help you to get to school? Oh, you have a sick mother. Or, oh, you know, your baby was sick last night. I understand that. Okay. You know, encouraging them. Those, all those things that we do here, for some reason, I made it a dividing line. Like, no, you can't do that here. So, like, I'm grateful. And this is what's so cool. We have the answers to life. All we have to do is keep living and not using. And we can keep helping each other. But then we become the light to everyone that comes in contact with us. That is powerful. And I've had that, those connections with people outside of the rooms. Or we recognize something in somebody. And, you know, it's that love. You know, and I know for myself, that was a problem before. I didn't know what love was. And I didn't know how to be loving and kind to myself. So if I couldn't be loving and kind to myself, how could I possibly be loving and kind to somebody else? You know, and I've learned that here. And when I think about when I show up and keep practicing that first step, and it's not just about the drugs. It's always an option, yes. But it's about the addiction. It's the way I think and how I, my perception, and how I want to put everything in a box, or I want to label. No, this is no good, so we're going to put this over here, and this is good, so I want more of this. You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is that I admit what's going on, and I'm open about it, whether it's my sponsor. You know, it's always has to be run past my higher power and other individuals. You know, I need to keep admitting, and when I can admit and I let it go, then I'm freed up, and then I can get the solution, whether it's that person or maybe I hear the solution when it comes out of my mouth. Like, I that's why I say to a lot of people, when they talk to me, I'm like, keep talking, keep talking, keep talking. Because sooner or later, whether you go around the bush 15 times, 20 times, you know, If you just keep talking about it, you get closer to the middle and you get to the truth. And that is my solution. That's my truth today. The more I sit still, the more I peel. And there's times where I'm peeling some skin off, man. Like, you know, you rip, you know how they say, just rip the Band-Aid off real quick and it'll just hurt for a little bit. Well, sometimes it feels like it's stuck on there. And I'll just go, you know, and I just want to keep covering it up because it's too painful. I'm afraid. Well, then once I know the truth, then what am I going to do then? Am I going to be able to be okay? You know, it's always that what if, what if, what if. And when I do that what if, then I'm in the problem and I'm not in the solution. So I just think it's hysterical right now because I was up there and I kept on getting the book out and reading and, you know, and I don't even know what I said, and I hope it helps somebody, or if anything, to identify that you have the same feelings and thought processes that I have. That's all I have. Thanks.